Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to officials of IEC. You are all welcome to our guests who are here today with us. You are all welcome. And I shall invite everybody for tea before we started. Members, we must apologize for the small venue. We are being allocated this venue by staff of parliament. So even if we don't want the venue, but because of the main committees that are sitting today, you take whatever you are given. So we do apologize for the small venue. Today we are dealing with the annual report of the IEC, one of our entities that account to Parliament through the Office of Home Affairs. With us we have the chairperson of the IEC, Mepensi Jagola, and the CEO. And I forgot the gentleman's name, I always forget him. And we have Mr. Norman Duplessis also with us. I think the chairperson, before you start, you'll introduce some of the your members who are here. I notice we have a new lady which we are not familiar with. You will introduce the staff who are here with you today. But before we start, maybe it will be proper that we also introduce ourselves so that she knows who she is speaking to as we do our work of parliament. My name is Maggie Mahunye. I am a member of the portfolio committee. And on my left is Mr. A.D. Matonsi, who is our committee secretary. On the right is Mr. Adam Salmon, who is our researcher. We have Nandi Pachos there behind you, who is also one of our support staff members. Members will introduce themselves, starting with Honorable Gaum.
Andre Gaum, I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, I'm Paul Hasegonwe, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, I'm Peter Peterson, a member of this committee.
I'm Graham McIntosh, and I'm also a member of the committee. I think I've been in politics longer than Mr. Norman Duplessis. Not that he's ever been in politics. He's been counting votes.
I'm Didi Mateve, member of this committee.
My name is Grace Potman, a member of this committee.
Thank you, honorable members. May Kensi, you will introduce your staff first.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, and good morning. My name is Kensi Tlagula. I'm the chairperson of the Electoral Commission. As the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee has already indicated, I'm here with the CEO of the Chief Electoral Officer on my right, Mosotho Moyetla, and next to him is Stephen Landry, who is a manager in the CEO's office, and on my left is Fiona Rowley, who is our CFO, new CFO. Members would recall that our CFO was Mr. Zolisa Mafula, the late, who passed away last year in April. And behind us is Mr. Norman Duplessis, Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, Corporate Services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just to note the apologies of my colleagues. Two of my colleagues, Judge Makanya and Commissioner Talia, are in the U.S. for the election today. And my deputy, Mr. Terry Zulan, I'm told he's running late. Mr. Bongani Finwa, Reverend Finwa, has a personal commitment that he could not get out of, the commitment that needs his personal attention. So I am submitting to the chairperson the apology.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honourable members, we also have members who have sent apologies, Honourable Defectors and Honourable Makuba, won't be with us today, and I'm not sure what is happening with other members who are not here. Maybe they will join us as we continue with our meeting. Chairperson, I will hand over to you to make your presentation.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Honorable Chairperson. Today, 1 year, 2 days since we were appointed as members of the Commission, you would recall that we were appointed on the 4th of November, 2011. And this is the first time that we are appearing before you as new members of the Commission, although we are also quite old, so to speak. Chairperson, the CEO will present the annual report to you and the members of the committee. However, I wish to just give you a high-level, I want to present some high-level points before the CEO presents the detailed annual report. The first thing to say is that our international work has increased phenomenally. We continue to receive a large number of sister organizations from all over the world. We used to receive quite a large number of organizations from the African continent, but we now receive sister organizations from other parts of the world as well. And we continue to provide technical assistance in election management to a number of our countries that are mentioned in our annual report, and that also is increasing, and also we are observing elections in a number of countries, and that work is also increasing. We also have to say that the year under review has been a rewarding one for us, because as an organization we received a number of awards in recognition of the work that we do. For instance, we were the first runner-ups in the All Africa Public Service Innovation Award, and we were winners in the United Nations Public Service Award. We were also awarded the first prize of the African Association of Public Administration and Management, and all these awards were in respect of our efforts at making electoral processes transparent, especially our results training project. We also received awards from the Center for Public Service Innovation for our e-procurement system, and also the Public Relations Institute of Southern Africa for the Atlas of Results. We received all these awards in the year under review. We were also elected to the presidency of the SADC Electoral Commissions Forum. You remember that the Electoral Commissions of SADC are organized. We have an association, and we were elected to the presidency of this association in the period under review, but re-elected again this year. When we submitted our annual report for the years that ended in March 2011, the Auditor General had expressed concern regarding policy development in the organization. We are pleased to report that we have paid attention to policy development and review, and you will realize that we reviewed a number of policies and developed new ones as well. We improved the accessibility of our voting stations as well. You'd know that the year that we are reporting for was a year for elections, and the CEO will give more detail as far as that is concerned, but of concern has been our accessibility of our voting stations, the distance that people have to walk to reach our voting stations, and we have tried to address that as well. We had a record-breaking voter turnout of 57%, which is unprecedented for a local government election. And this can be attributed to a massive advertising campaign we mounted for the 2011 elections. We improved on our voter education, and as a result of that, the number of spoiled ballots also decreased from the previous election. We're still maintaining a high retention rate of staff. Our staff turnover remains quite low. Very few people leave the organization, which is a good sign. I think of importance to honorable members is that you would recall that for the year that ended in March 2011, which was similar to the year that we are reporting on because it was an election year as well, For that year, members would recall that we received a qualified audit from the Auditor General due to the following. The first one was expenditure relating to payment of electoral staff, an expenditure in respect of lease for municipal electoral offices. We also received emphasis of a matter related to irregular expenditure. Our internal controls were found wanting, and so on. We appeared before you at that time, and we made an undertaking to you that we will ensure that this does not happen again, that we will address all the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. And I am pleased, Honorable Jefferson, to inform you and your members that for this reporting period, we received an unqualified audit from the Auditor General with no emphasis of matters. Of course, we still have to improve on a few things which the CFO and the CEO will talk about. The area of improvement in particular is irregular expenditure, and they will tell more about what gave rise to the irregular expenditure. Other areas of improvement that we still have to address is the adoption of a comprehensive human resources strategy and plan. We have begun work in this regard, and this work will soon be completed. Another area that we still have to pay attention to is the development of ICT policies, and in particular, IT governance. We have to pay attention to this, and we have started work in this regard. Continuous training of electoral staff is a matter that also needs our attention, because we are now preparing for an election, and we train our staff just shortly before an election, and we're trying to find ways of having a sustainable training program for electoral staff. And another area of challenge is continued visibility of the commission in between elections, especially through civic education. This chairperson is the presentation that I will make at a high level as the chairperson of the IEC. And with that and with your kind permission, I will then request the CEO to present the annual report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you and honorable members. I have the pleasure to present our report to you this morning. The presentation is going to be on the board. For us, I guess, to deal with this matter substantially, the issues right at the beginning, and I must indicate that slide is erroneous with respect to the date. Please accept my apology. It's supposed to be 31st March 2012, not 2011. Let's go to page 3 of that. It's fine. Page 3 of that is the vision and the mission. For the period under review, this had not changed. Perhaps when we come here next time, we may talk to different vision and mission. But for now, this we have dealt with substantially in the past. If you allow, I will pass. The organizational values continue to guide us, that we will endeavor to live and follow best practices in stopping all forms of waste, driving for results and success, and planning and working so as to maximize all of our inputs. That Those have really helped us a great deal, and we continue to work in that regard. We have sought to do our business ethically, honestly, and truthfully, and the kind of awards that the chairperson spoke about really talk to us trying to improve continuously. Our constitutional mandate, as you know, has not changed, and so we will not deal with it today, if you allow. The legislative mandate, as on 7, is also not changed. 8 is still the same. And page 9 is really a point where I want to deal with this matter, to begin to deal with this matter substantially. We have always looked at our work in terms of strategic oriented goals, and 5 of them we have set ourselves. The first one was to promote principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections.
that talks to the work that we do, creating conditions that will ensure that the work that we do continues in a way that is leads to free and fair elections. Secondly, we are looking at improving organizational efficiency and effectiveness, dealing with the kind of challenges that we came here last year about, and that we will do something and continue to improve on them. Thirdly, to manage elections, free and fair elections. Fourthly, to foster public participation with a view to deepening electoral democracy in this nation. And finally, to support the core business of the Electoral Commission, all of the support services work that we do. In terms of the program performance, all of those outcomes are put into five programs, or organized in terms of five programs. And the first one is to is the Commission services. That's made up of members of the Commission in particular, that office as well. And the second one is Office of the Chief Electoral Officer. That looks at the work that we do, including internal audit. The third one is Electoral Operations. That looks at all of the work that we do directly related to holding elections. And program four, it's outreach, which talks to education, both civic and voter education, but also our communication programs, and, you know, programs we put on radio, dealing with the media, and all of that. And the last one, it's really corporate services. How are we doing in terms of program one? The program one has two strategic objectives or sub-objectives. The first one is to promote the acceptance and adherence to democratic electoral principles nationally. It really deals with the work we do here at home. The second one looks at the position positioning the Electoral Commission as a continuously improving organization, but also promoting the acceptance of and adherence to democratic electoral principles internationally. That talks to the work that we do also outside of the country. In terms of the performance indicators for Program 1, the first performance indicator was looking at the number of meetings within the period, reporting period, with relevant stakeholders nationally. We, in the comparable period in 2010-2011, had a baseline of 21, but for this period we had 6, and that we have achieved because our actual was 9, and you will note, Chairperson and members, that over and above the planned meetings, stakeholders did approach us for other meetings which we undertook with them, and so that really talks to the difference. The second one is the number of interactions within the reporting period with relevant stakeholders internationally. And you would notice there, Chairperson, that we have more than doubled the target that we had. And the answer really lies in what the Chairperson indicated when she started, that we have really seen a lot of international activity here at home. A lot of our counterpart elsewhere in the world have come to visit us, and that has pushed that number from 14 to 29. With respect to the second program, strategic objective 2.1 there is to review and improve implementation of and adherence to organizational policies and the achievement of strategic goals and objectives in the Electoral Commission. And in that regard, we look at, again, another area that the Chairperson looked at, policies, reviewing policies, particularly after the last financial year. We thought we would start very cautiously because we thought that the work that we needed to do there was extensive. And we put our target at 2. But in fact, once we started, we realized that, you know, there was a lot of work we needed to do, and we set out to do most of it. And we accelerated the policy development. And we are very pleased in that regard that we did most of the work in that financial period. The second one was to extend the extent of implementation of the annual risk-based internal audit plan. We, given the qualified audit that we had, there was an aggressive kind of plan that we had put down for ourselves to look at. We did not achieve all of it, as you will see, And we, in terms of that plan, we have achieved 93% of it. But I must, upfront, indicate that it was very, very aggressive. And that is no reason why we did not, you will notice that part of that has led to the unqualified audit that we have in this year. So that talks to the work that we had set us around to do. Program 3 has quite a number of sub objectives there. The first one being to provide accessible venues for voters to register and to vote. The chairperson indicated that, when we set out, we had looked at, again, improving access to voting stations, and I'm very pleased to say that we have done well in that area. Second one is to enable voters to register and to vote. And I will talk to this also. We have achieved and exceeded our expectations. The third one is maintaining liaison and funding of registered political parties. It continues to proceed well. Fourth one is to comply with election timetables for all electoral events. Another area where we have done very well. We have no problem in this area. And really, this is something we do so regularly. At the moment, it's not an area of concern. The first one is providing electoral material and storage and distribution for all of our electoral events. Again, another area that we do well. Elections, by their nature, require that we have the right materials at the right place at the right time. And, it's an area where we continue to improve. I would not want to say we've done very well because, they say if you have not had a problem in logistics for 6 hours in a day, you've had a great day. So you always have one or two things there that go wrong. But overall, we are very pleased with the performance. The sixth one is securing and maintaining local offices and venues for electoral events. We did report when we came to see you the last time that is an area where we are finding that municipalities in the main are battling to accommodate us, and we have to find venues. That continues to be so, but I'll talk a little more to that. In terms of how we have performed, when we look at the proportion of voting districts where the boundary of the voting district is in terms of the standards that we set, I must say that we do not look. These are the outer, boundaries for our standards. Many of those, as you see, 96% of those are within or less that. In the instances where we have greater distances, that's where we seek to find ways of ensuring that voters do not suffer getting to their voting stations, and we can talk in detail about that. We continue to look at this area. Whenever we go to elections, we do redelimitation, we look at identifying voting stations and looking at, how accessible they are, so that we continue to address the area of people being within close living distance from where they vote. The second one is the number of venues provided to voters at which they vote. We had indicated that we would want to have 22,000 voting stations, but in the period leading to this election, we noticed that in highly populated areas, we couldn't add more venues, but we could structure our voting stations to have streams. And so you found that where we streamed, we accommodated a high number of voters, but in a very efficient manner, in that each one of the streams, dealt with fewer numbers of voters and therefore facilitated voting access into that station quickly, going in and going out very quickly. And that meant that we did not necessarily need to increase the number of stations. So streaming was very useful and very efficient, and it addressed most of our problems in highly populated areas. We've also looked at the number of registered voters on the voters roll nationally. We had indicated that we would be looking at just short of 23 million people. And I must say that we were very pleased with 23,363,000 voters. A majority of those were young people, and we had set out to deal with young people. So in that area, again, we exceeded our expectations. In terms of the frequency that the voters' roll is checked against the population register,
We continue to do that every month. In some months, we do it just over once a month. But when we have an electoral activity, we always ensure that our water soil is up to date. The other measure there is in terms of the number of meetings with members, political liaison committees, which we call PLCs. We had set out to have 1,234 meetings. These were broken down into meetings that we hold nationally, the ones that we will hold at provincial level, and then the ones that we would hold in the municipal sphere of government. We have exceeded that number primarily because we have seen an increase in electoral activity, particularly by elections, that has accounted in part for us exceeding the number that we had indicated. We also look at the availability and working base of electronic party registration at commission offices. Parties, as you know, can register at any time with the Electoral Commission. This is an activity that remains open, and you know, every working day it's a data that's available, and we have dealt with it in that manner. With respect to the finalization of the application for the registration of political parties, in terms of the time period, we have 35 days in law to complete the registration process, and every one of the applications that we have received in the period was processed within that period. The percentage of elections for which the voter roll was certified, it's every one of them. It's 100% record. When we run a by-election or any election, we have to ensure that voter roll is certified. In terms of the timetable that set out, every one of those activities was achieved, and we are very pleased with this. The percentage of legal complaints of contesting candidates in an election, yes, we've not had situations where we had challenges with this. One or two instances where there have been challenges, you know, in our county courts of law work very well, and they help us, and, you know, we always go there. What we do see, or we have seen and we continue to see, is that with by-elections and, you know, the contestations, even within parties, there are issues that from time to time lead to court action. But in Maine, they have not affected the electoral timetable that we have set forth to achieve for those electoral events. Looking at the calendar days in which we have to hold elections, we are required to hold elections within 90 days of the date on which the vacancy had arisen, and every one of our by-elections has met with the legal prescripts. We also looked at the number of maximum number of calendar days in which we deal with PR seats within municipalities. We are required to deal with those PR seats within 35 days, and this we do. This, again, is another area where a lot of contestations and court activity have taken place, primarily because of, you know, issues that arise within municipalities and local level. But on the whole, we are pleased with it. It's not, you know, we have exceptions. It's not rules that, you know, every one of them, it's a situation that we have to worry about. The time period in calendar days in which election results are announced, we have 7 days to announce election results. For the last elections, we have announced those results within 3 days. But I must point out that for by-elections, we do so shortly after the by-election. The voting and counting has been completed at the station. 9 out of 10 times, in fact, 99%, it happens on the night before colleagues go home. After a by-election, we already have that result. The proportion of registered voters who voted in the 2011 municipal elections, and here we are talking about the turnout, it's an issue that the chairperson alluded to when she opened. We had looked at 45%, and we achieved 57.6%. Truthfully, there was a lot of work that was done, and we must indicate that we are grateful to the work that political parties have done themselves, and over and above our communications campaigns. I think the work that parties were undertook also helped in this regard, but also the work that was done by the media. We are grateful and we are hoping that that kind of work continues into the future. If we look at some of the statistics at operational level that we manage, you know, when we look at what facilities in terms of warehousing distribution that we should have, you will see that 10/2, 3, 4/1. The 10 is really the number of facilities that we keep nationally, warehousing facilities, central warehousing facilities. 234 are the ones that we keep at municipal offices throughout the country, and 1 is the one that we keep nationally. And so we had set out to keep at all of those levels, you know, those numbers, and we have achieved them. All of our voting stations in the period leading to elections had materials that they needed for each electoral event, and we have met our requirements in that respect. All of our municipal offices have functioning local offices, and we are quite pleased with that. When we look at the number of voting stations that are secured and functional on election day, it must be the same number of stations that we have nationally. And we indicate to you, Chairperson and members, that all of them were functional. And in addition, we point out that, you know, we had created 496 voting centers with 1,504 substations. These are a good example, a school with 6 classrooms where we will use every one of those classrooms because there are a high number of registered voters there and break the voters down so that, you know, they don't have to stand in queues for long, they, you know, and we improve service in that way. So it has helped a great deal. One of the major indicators that we work very well with the Department of Education, amongst others, is looking at the number of schools that we use as voting stations. This helps not only us, but also the schools, because they find ways to have infrastructure that they need, which remains with those schools when we do not have electoral activity. And we've always wanted to keep that number, you know, as a substantial part of our voting stations infrastructure. And I'm again pleased to say that we have exceeded our target by 4%. When we deal with strategic objective number four, program number four, and program number four, just for, you know, to recap, it's dealing with outreach, the work that we do in education, but also, you know, in communicating our programs to our stakeholders. There we look at the number of voter education events, and Chairperson, I must say, you know, this has been evolving, and you know, we started, you know, with a situation where it was very difficult to say. We had a meeting with 3,000 people. For audit purposes, the auditor general want to have proof that there were 3,000 people and so on and so forth. So when we looked at the targets, we were battling with this. And perhaps we were on the conservative side, but this is an area that we have, you know, exceeded by far. But we are saying to ourselves, we need to resist it and look at. We would have been very worried if we were very shocked, but we, you know, we have exceeded, but that does not mean that we have to relax. I think we need to just fine-tune it and bring it more in line with what we will manage. But when one looks at the performance over the period, we are very pleased that we have done well in that area. The number of projects with our strategic partners, we had set up to do 150. Again, we had exceeded by far. I'm sorry, 50. We have exceeded this by far. We had a very interesting period where, you know, some of the partners or persons or institutions, in fact, have come to us and really come with a creative project that we worked with them on, of which we had not anticipated initially. So there was a lot of good working relationship in that regard, and for that we are grateful to them as well. Looking at the quantity of educational materials we disseminated, we were slightly short, but nothing really to worry about. If one looks at the amount of work we did with partners, one will see that you know, the shortfall was not so significant. One of the things that we continue to look at is the use of electronic and social media. And I'm sure there is going to be an area that we're going to look extensively at in the future. One of the measures that we have in place in terms of program 4 is the number of spoiled ballots in an election. And although we had set ourselves to have 1.6% of those ballots, the actual was 1.89. So we had 0.29% underachievement. But in the elections that we held, the 2011 elections, you will recall that there were instances where quite a number of boundary disputes, were underway. And, in some instances, we had spoiled ballots as a protest, in that respect. This is an area that we continue to watch, and we would like to bring those spoiled ballots even further down. In terms of research projects that we undertake, we have two projects that we set out to do, but National Treasury came to our rescue and helped us with funding, more funding, and we undertook three projects for which we were really, really grateful. We had materials that we process, and the ones that we put for future generations and scholars and people that are interested in electoral affairs, and we look at the kind of those materials that we archive, and you will see that we had set out to do 65,000 to archive those 65,000 records. We were short by 1.3%, but it wasn't something that we were too worried about, given the fact that it was an election year and quite a lot of that material in large volumes was used right towards the end of the year. So it was not, although we did not achieve it, it's not something that has taken away from us a significant amount of work. The number of publications that we had set out to produce, we have exceeded that, and again, we are happy with that achievement. We then look at the area of where that we need, and we are still underway and this is the area of designing and implementing a knowledge management system within the organization, and that is work that continues well. And will not be covered completely in the period that we are reporting. Continues even in the current period, and the report will be made in the next reporting period. The same with the next page, really, on knowledge management. It still relates to the area that we dealt with, as well as the issue of intellectual property. We're developing policies there together with the knowledge management policies. And we will report on the work that we do there in due course. When we look at the number of people that we have reached directly, and I think the operative word is directly. Sometimes you give a kid a flyer. That's the direct person you reach, but that kid will take it to a family of five people. We are not looking at the multiplier effect. We are looking at it directly. We had set out to issue or target 5 million people. We have exceeded that by 10.5%. I leave it to the House to look at the multiplier effect. Some houses have two people, others have more, and that's really the kind of difference that we were seeking to make. In terms of the number of planned media activities, we had set out in terms of the target to have 10 media releases, but we attained 18. Again, it talks to the number of by-elections that we have organized in the period, exceeding the target that we had planned. When we look at interviews, we have also exceeded, in fact, and the media analysis reports are those things that come every month, and so every month we have been looking at those reports. When we deal with the number of publications, we slightly had less publications than we had planned, but this is another area where we had really been very, very aggressive. And if you look at the previous one where we were dealing with number of media activities, and this one, number of publications, we were hoping that we would be able to share a lot of publications. But in a year when you are undertaking an election, There's very little work to sit and write and do, you know. Activity does take away from you. And in that respect, we did not completely achieve our targets there. The number of events that we had organized, we had planned not to organize any events, and we ended up with four. You know, but the reason for that was that the election was also election date was also pushed out to the financial year 2011-2012. When we look at advertising, there's a whole lot of statistics there. You know, on the kind of exposure that we wanted to attain. You will note that because the election was held not in the 2010-2011 financial year, but the 2011-2012, there's some of that was moved out. But we are very pleased with the performance even in that area. The last program that we deal with is the Strategic Program 5. That really looks at our support services. And there we looked at the area of human resources that the chair touched on, a number of policies that we dealt with, and also looking at how we complement the training of our staff. We also look at the support that we provide to the institution, and also the funding that is aligned with the strategy. There was a need to comply with financial legislation, particularly coming from the qualified audit, and there clearly our work was cut out, and we did in fact set out to do what we wanted to do. We also needed to develop and implement a supply chain management framework. We did have it, but you know, there were quite a number of compliance issues that we needed to deal with, and once again, those are the areas where we have spent quite a lot of time and emphasis in dealing with the matter. The chairperson spoke about the work we are doing in information communications technology, and also, you know, particularly the governance framework in that area. And that is work that will be completed in this period. We are doing very, very well in terms of our own targets that we have set, and working with the Auditor General, and we're quite pleased in that area. But if we look at the indicators, when we look at the strategies and the policies that we needed to have in place for HR, that work continues and we will complete in the next financial year. But we are very pleased with the outcomes that we have up to now. The staff that we have recruited and paid as per various recruitment and payment policies and plans was 93%. When we reported the last time, one of the things that led to the qualification we had was in this area. It continues to be a difficult area to deal with. In a way, you know, it's not 100%, but it's been a small miracle. We set out to do 95%. We achieved 93%. But it made a big, big difference in the work that we do. We'll still chase the 201% and look at exceeding it. But if you ask anyone that deals with the things directly, it's a great relief to be where we are, chairperson. And, the greatest challenge is maintaining it and even doing that in the future. We have to do that, but it still remains a challenge out there. Interestingly, you know, when Stats South Africa released their result, one of the journalists asked them, you know, what their challenges were with respect to this, and I could just hear that echo in a very common way. And they were saying that they were in the 90%, and I thought it would be interesting to know what is meant by 90%, you know. But they do, this is clearly an area that we, all of us, will need to face and focus on. In terms of the performance compliance with recruitment and payment plans, there we did very well. We achieved what we set out to achieve, and we are happy. The integrated training strategy and planned by target dates, developed and approved. We had set out to really look at this in preparation also for the 2014 national and provincial elections. And this was just not a thing that we were looking at for the period. And we are proceeding well. Those plans, when we report next time on our plans, we will share with you extensively. But early in the new year, in the next year, we will begin to see those plans rolling out. Some of them a little earlier than we had planned, and that will really give us a good start to our preparations. Training of our electoral officials, it has been a big thing. In the last elections, 2011 municipal elections, you will remember that we introduced special votes in municipal elections. And that on itself was a major challenge that needed training fairly within a short space of time. But we are institutionalizing that for all of our by-elections, we have special voting anyway. And when we go to elections and we have special votes, we are hoping that it's familiar territory that we deal with, literally every month. We're also looking at the number of training development interventions that we have. These are training sessions that we hold. We were looking at 325. We achieved 305, but it was not the lesser number does not mean that where we had scheduled training we did not attain it. How it typically works is that we train people. They have to attain a certain mark. If they haven't, we retrain them again, and if they don't achieve that mark, we retrain them. We found that there was more efficiency. The mark was attained without us having to repeat the programs a lot more. So the 305 in that instance does not reflect quality, and we will battle with finding a way to reflect on the quality there. The date by which comprehensive support services strategy plan is approved, that has happened, and we are now just working on the implementation. The budget and project charter framework for the commission, both have been approved, and they are functional at the moment. The question of the audit opinion, the chairperson has indicated that we have always targeted an unqualified one, and we have attained an unqualified one. The supply chain procedures and framework, we have put those into place, we are pleased again with that. In terms of looking at the 5-year information communication technology infrastructure and plan, that work continues, it's underway, and we should be reporting good progress within the next reporting period. We had set out to do some of it in this year. We have not been able to because of the unavailability of some of the people in the industry that we regard as crucial to this work. But it continues as a matter of interest. There is work that we are doing in the next week, which is substantially going to make us realize this objective completely. In terms of how our network operates and how the uptime of our networks, they are one of the most efficient that we have at 99.5% efficiency level, and we are very happy with that. Chairperson, I've really been running through a lot of the work that we have done in detail. I'm sure we will, where there are questions, we will deal with them. But to complete the presentation, I'd like to ask through you, Chairperson, that the Chief Financial Officer deal with the financial statements. These are very brief, and we can then deal with any questions that members may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, I'm going to take you through some of the highlights of the financial statements and the audit outcomes for the financial year ended the 31st of March 2012. The first thing that we need to note is the outcome of the audit report, and as was indicated by our chairperson earlier and by the CEO, we achieved an unqualified audit for the financial year, with no emphasis of matter paragraphs. The one issue that was raised was around irregular expenditure in relation to compliance with laws and regulations, but even in this area, we managed to reduce the total from $233 million in the previous year to $42 million in the year under review. The key area of irregular expenditure related to the failure to indicate the allocation of preferential procurement preference points in the request for quotations mainly. This was an area where we had, it was a new area raised in the previous financial year by the Auditor General. It had not previously been an issue. But because in this current financial year, the year under review, the audit only raised the issue after part of the year had passed, although we acted upon it immediately, some expenditure had already been incurred in this area. But we did take immediate steps, and as has been indicated, we have done significant work on procurement in the past year. We've comprehensively reviewed all of our policies and our procedures, all of our documents and templates. We've held a number of procurement workshops to disseminate the requirements across our decentralized procurement function. So work in this area will continue, but I'm hopeful that the number will reduce even further in the current financial year. Then looking at the financial statements, the basis preparation, they encompass all of the reporting as required by the Public Finance Management Act, and they are prepared in accordance with GRAP. It means they're prepared on the accruals basis of accounting and not the cash basis of accounting. But broadly speaking, the basis of preparation and the accounting policies were unchanged in this year from the previous year. The income statement or statement of financial performance, you will see that in the comparative year we had 1.4 billion rands worth of allocation, whereas in the current year only 854 million rand. But at the bottom of the slide you will note the rollover to next year. Because of the change in timing of the election to the very early part of this financial year, the year under review, at the end of last year, or when it became apparent that the election date was going to fall into the new period, we actually did a comprehensive analysis of our expenditure and identified 469 million rands of the 211 allocation that would be rolled over into the 212 financial year to deal with those election-related expenses. At the end of the March 2012 year, we did a review of the unspent budget, and in fact, there was 21.6 million that was rolled over into the current financial year. Looking at the numbers, the key number there that has increased significantly is in relation to administrative expenditure, and this is broadly speaking election-related expenditure. In particular, in that number, the increase of 828 versus 647 is in relation to 205 million rands worth of S&T expenditure for the election staff who were employed in May, as opposed to the 96 million rand that we spent in the equivalent period, which was for the staff of the two registration weekends. And in addition, there was an additional close on 50 million spent on printing and stationery, which relates to the printing and stationery of the election-related materials. In looking at the statement of financial position, the asset side of the balance sheet, again, the numbers for 2012 reflect the out-of-election cycle, and as a consequence are quite a lot smaller. The asset base is broadly unchanged. Inventories have reduced from 27 million, which was the stock holding immediately prior to the election, to 14 million. The 9 million increase in trade and other receivables as against the 5 million from the previous year reflects our move out of municipal offices and into commercial premises as municipalities are increasingly unable to cater for our requirements, and therefore that 4 million increase is broadly speaking in relation to rental deposits. The prepayments down to 7 million as against 13.7 million. The 13.7 million reflects payments made for facilities for the election, which was 6 weeks hence at the end of the last financial year, whereas at the end of the 2012 financial year relates, broadly speaking, to software payments, where we make a license fee payment for a 12-month period, and that's the unexpired portion as at the end of March. You will note the cash and cash equivalents is down to 37.8 million as opposed to 562 million in the comparative period. And the 562 million obviously includes the 469 million I had mentioned that we had identified for roll forward, with the 37 million is a much more a realistic figure for a period outside of an election cycle. Then looking at the liability section of the balance sheet, the operating lease liability is the lease smoothing requirement, which reflects a 10 million increase because our lease agreements are relatively new. The trade and other payables from exchange transactions, 41 million, reflect both our increased efforts to reduce our payment cycle to ensure we meet with the PFMA requirements of paying within 30 days, as well as, again, the fact that the 132.6 million in the previous year was in relation to election-related expenses. 41 is a much more normalized level for an out of election cycle. The foreign and local aid assistance reflects the amount that we hold on behalf of COCTA for the traditional council elections. That's the unspent portion of the funds that we have for that project. And that, I think, is a high-level summary. So thank you.
Thank you, CFO. I would like to welcome Deputy Chair of the IC, Dr. Terry Zilan. You are welcome. And to apologize for our small venue. Honorable members, that was the input by the IEC. I do not notice any hands to show the good work that you do. Targets were met and some were above the targets. I noticed that the Marcella, followed by Honorable McIntosh, Honorable Gam, will be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. My take really is on, before I do that, let me acknowledge the very good presentation by the IEC. One cannot help but to appreciate the very good work that has been done. I have noticed, for instance, on the number of targets that were set that have been achieved. But I wanted to understand in certain areas, for instance, the on program one, the meetings that were planned in that period, the planned meetings were 6 and the achieved were 9. And also in terms of the percentage on program two, on the percentage that was planned was 100% in terms of meeting the target. But if you look at the internal risk-based audit, the target was 93% as opposed to 100% with a 7% variance as a deviation from the initial target. What is it that the IEC is planning to mitigate that in future? But if you do not plan against that, it's going to continuously becoming a challenge in meeting your target. And obviously, one day you want a very clean audit. And I think it's something that is possible. I do agree to say on program four that we cannot, in fact, the target against sports ballots, it's a target that really has no spending. You can plan that target, but it does not mean you can achieve anything on that. In 2006, I've got a case in point here, which is on record, where many of the, for instance, in Cape Town, we had many candidates in 2006 who were independent candidates. That was because Angoba Ngomtu's mad. You would go around having an individual say, I'm going to spend. How do you stop that person when he says he wants to spend? And then you've got a person that is elected by a political party, that is the majority. But people that would find themselves not wanting to vote for his candidate, saying, no, we don't want this person, we don't know him. And then in protest vote, then they vote against. How do they do that? Sometimes they do not like the opponent, but they choose to spoil the ballot deliberately. Even in the campaigns, you hear people saying, let us punish them and spoil the ballot. So how do you then, as IEC, go out and say, no, don't spoil the ballot? Because, in fact, a spoiled ballot is what is called in a meeting like this one, that I wish to abstain from voting. But in an election, people want to go and show that we are going to spoil this ballot. So that has been some of our challenge in 2006. But as to planning for that, I do not know how one can properly plan for it. Obviously, it's a target that we wish to put in there. The last one, Chairperson, is the area of the finances. I've noticed that there's an amount of 42 million rand in irregular expenses. But, you know, how is it that you have 42 million rand and there's no clear indication of this money? How is it has been? Why has it been an irregular expense? What constitutes that 42 million? It's quite a lot of money, you know, which is not properly accounted for. And I'd like some answers in terms of that. Recently, we have witnessed that there were some concerns with some staff members wanting to protest some processes in terms of employment within the organization. It was reported widely in the press. I would like to know if you are at liberty to divulge that in this committee as to how did you resolve that, and perhaps what were the issues that led to such protests and letters being sent left, right, and center. Because at that time, as a committee, we felt that it might be some form of a disorganizational part of the organization itself. But we'd like to hear that. I'm sure the chairperson of the commission might be, you know, in a very good position to tell us what has happened, and the CEO, of course. And go to Claire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry.
Now, it's always great to have an entity like IEC reporting. It's a centre of excellence in our country, and of course it does have the advantage of a regular cyclical work. So in a sense, you're really just basically running a good show, which you're hopefully making better. Thank you for that, and as an elected public representative, I'm especially grateful and thankful that we have an IEC that works well and South Africans can trust. I have one or two slight, very short questions, Madam Chair, and maybe I've just misunderstood this good presentation. The one is under Program 3, where you have the voters' roll chipped against the National Population Register, and I gather you're doing that at least once a month or about that often. What I'd like to know is, how do you actually check it? I mean, if you could just explain, do you get Home Affairs obviously has an ID. How do you, as it were, synchronize, I suppose would be the word, your voters' roll against the National, and I don't quite understand is under Program 3.63 at schools, and the CEO mentioned that you make an improvement in a school, and I think that's great, as we say, if you're helping, you help. But what I just don't understand is that sentence. It says, in the end, its intense efforts to access schools fortunately prevailed, and the drop in usage was prevented. And it seems to me that linked to the nominal rentals. Do the schools want more money from you? So maybe that's an implication. And then under 4.2.1, your archived and preserved records, do you keep them in Pretoria, or do you send it to the National Archive in Cape Town? And if you do, how long do you keep them with yourselves? And I was born before technology, but I did do the 3 R's. I don't understand Program 4. What is a knowledge management strategy? Okay. And then the last question I've got, I'm sure you're applying your minds to it, is one of the interesting things to come out of the census not to be surprised really, is that 90% of South Africans have cell phones, and maybe more. But of course we're also getting smartphones. And my question is, are you looking at the possibility of voting on one smartphone? In other words, setting up an app, which is the IEC app, where you register on your ID number, and you vote on your ID number, and then obviously nobody can vote on that ID number again that day. And I understand the problems, I don't want to go into great details, but are you looking at that? Because it could mean a lot of people not having to stand in queues. If you're prepared to work your bank account and make payments on your smartphone, I don't see why IEC couldn't look at the possibility of voting on your smartphone. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable Gum, followed by Honourable Bushman.
Honourable McIntosh has stolen part of my question now, unfortunately. But I think the broader question in that regard is not only an app or a smartphone or whatever the case may be, but I understand that, for example, we have the election taking place today in the United States, and I understand that there is a possibility in certain states, whatever the case may be, to vote online. So what we're talking about, in a sense, is when are we entering the next phase of in terms of that, that we don't have the physical kind of queuing situation that we have at the moment, or at least have that possibility of taking the next step in terms of voting and in terms and also of being a leader in that field, in the world. Because maybe there is indeed a lot to gain from such a process. It would be faster, whatever the case may be. Second question is that usually, and we are now going to the next election in a year and a bit's time, and one do find that it takes a very long time for the results to come out. I know that is not only the situation in our jurisdiction, but really everywhere, maybe because of the natural disasters and so on. In the U.S. we're going to have a bit of trouble again, as we had with the Florida situation not long ago. But is there something that you are doing in that regard, or isn't there much you can do to make sure that we get the results faster? Then I think I also want to congratulate you with the work that you've been doing, also to get an unqualified audit and so on. We're really very happy about that situation. You have improved and worked hard in that regard. The real proof in the pudding for the new commission will of course be the next election. So we hope that will be a very smooth election, and that everything will go well. But thus far you've really done well, and thank you very much for that. The last thing is that we communicated with you at some stage concerning amendments that have been proposed by the opposition pertaining to the electoral legislation. We understood from you that you are also going to come back to this committee at some stage with amendments. I think in that regard we'd just like to know, where are we in that process, and secondly to urge you to please come to this committee in time so that we don't have a last minute crisis situation as far as that is concerned, and core challenges or whatever the case may be. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members want to, is it called the e-voting or what do you call it? I don't know what it's been called, because that's done in India. But no, I'm not comfortable with it.
Thank you, Joseph.
No, I still think the manual one is just super for 100%. Honorable Bosman?
Knowing that when you do an SMS, it goes first to America before it reaches the person it goes to. It tells you what could happen in between when you vote that way. That's why they can intervene and respond to you before the person responds to you. So So these are the issues we would look at the time when it is relevant. But the breakdown for the 42 million has been done. And there's something that actually, you know, where I am, Chair, I feel like crying because of the pain when we raised these things last year. And I know I finally raised this day. And today we're sitting here, a year later. The IEC tells us human error occurred in respect of vendor selection. But Chair, when you'd recall that we said, we're not disputing that there is human error. But the issue is, how do you then prepare yourself to correct and deal with that? And because at that time, I had a very heated approach from the IC when I raised this issue. It has come again. And now it has costed us 42 million. That we're saying it is an irregular expenditure. And I think as a committee again, we need to be solved and just accept that it's a human error. You know, despite the fact that where it is raised, human error is only 1,007. But all these issues that are listed as a breakdown for the 42 million, if you read, they are all human errors. And if you look at the narration made at the beginning of this report, the very same first pages, I think, around 2.1.4, performance and organizational environment. The recommendations made are to say to satisfactorily resolve or cope with the situation described, it is essential for the Electoral Commission to attend to the following inter alia. And those following, if you can go to the previous minutes of last year, we raised them. A year later, IC begin to accept indirectly that we really have to look at these things. And sometimes when we raise issues, it's not that we're destructive, but we're trying to be strong and say, look at these things so that in future they don't occur. We don't, that's why we are here. It's because we know in some ways the other person would make a mistake. We are here to help each other to see those particular things. But Chair, the other thing that is very much interesting on this report is that we've got five programs. And amongst the two is the Commission Services and the Office of the Chief Electoral Officer. As programs, you would recall that we raised this issue last week with the department. If IEC can have those two as programs, why don't we have a program for the ministerial offices? If an entity of the department would have their office commission services and CEO, I'm trying to compare, I'm trying to say to this committee, we must look at these things because the answers we get from other institutions are different. It means this thing is possible. And IC has made clear to us that it is possible. And last week we were told it is a request by the Treasury that we do not have to have that particular, because the two are different. And as a result, yes, they have to be programmed differently. But what is interesting, again, is that what we want to feel and know, feel and look and feel, is the program 4, which is outreach. That is fundamentally interesting and important. Well, to me. But you don't have 33 permanent personnel out of 800. I think somewhere you said your total personnel is 873, with other things happening, reduced to 823, I think. And you have a population of plus minus 50 million in South Africa, and you have 33 permanent people to deal with and outreach to those people. What does that say to us? Maybe IEC should maybe inform us, maybe there's another thing that we do not know that they may be able to know. The under the performance indicators, there's an issue raised by Honorable Masela that to decrease the number of spoiled papers. But basically this should be done through education, which is very important. And we raised it even last year. We even made a recommendation to say we do not think education should only be done during elections or around election time, but we thought it needs to be an ongoing thing so that if we have spoiled papers, we know for sure that it means what you are saying. It's not that people don't know what they're supposed to do on the ballot papers. But having gone through the report again, what I would say, in terms of meetings that are taking place, yes, with stakeholders, as it is said, and there's many meetings, there's 1,000, I thought we have 365 days. But we understand that these meetings are done by different people at different levels. That's why you would have 1,000 couple meetings. As what to say, when do we have those with communities? We know that there have been some records in terms of that, but we don't feel that much interaction with communities as opposed to the in-house meetings of certain communities. Even if it's meetings, you see the problem with the report somewhere. It's a good report, I must say. But that's why it helps us to then engage with it. The report would talk of those meetings and say with stakeholders. Now, you don't know exactly who are these stakeholders in terms of seeing whether they would have an effect to communities. At times you are told it's PLOs and all those other things, but you don't really get to understand where this thing is actually making an impact. Ours now is to ensure that communities get to understand these things. Maybe it won't be 100%, but at least we must have that feel all over. But the other thing that is happening is that the auditor, in his opinion, he raises some of the things, which is a technicality that we had fallen in for the department. The issues were raised the previous year, and then we got an unqualified report. And the very same issues the next year cost us a qualified report. So I'm saying I would request that whatever that has been, because if you look at these issues, the irregular expenditure, the fruitless, and the other thing that he does not say, the auditor, is the issue, while the report itself says, we are unable to pay people within 30 days. The report says it. It has classified that. But the auditor does not say anything around that as such. But it means next year it might be an issue. But because it is not highlighted strongly, it might then make IEC not to take it serious, and the next year we got a qualification based on that. So the other thing is on the human resource personnel. There is some way we are told that the cases have been referred to CCMA, but among those cases there are two cases within which they were dismissed by CCMA, I think, if I understood correctly. But then it says the reasons are not known. Which is, remember, this report is a public report. It's going to be read by people. They would want to know as to what was happening. Why would CCMA just dismiss cases and not tell why are they dismissing those cases? They won't be in this position where we are, where we are questioning and we are getting answers. Now, the other important aspect is the very same training of that personnel in terms of controls. Because another thing that was raised was around the controls within the very same audit. And you then don't get exactly what is actually, well, we would expect that to happen next year, of course, that we get a report in terms of what would happen. And the issues that were raised at the very same environmental issues that have been picked, you don't see where they were being told what is going to be done to correct those issues pertaining to non-availability of some municipal managers or municipal officials to assist in IC work. And furthermore, I don't think it's only municipality. And all those people who are employed and also working for IEC, how do we then see the IEC correcting that situation so that people get focused 100% on IEC? The last thing, Chair, they have reported on international things and the work they are doing with other countries, but we don't have a formatted kind of work so that we understand the impact the IEC is doing internationally and otherwise. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bosman. Chairperson, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members for those questions. I will respond to some of the questions, and the ones that I have not responded to, my colleagues will do that. I'm just going to pick up a few. The issue of voter turnout that was raised is really the same as the issue of the voter turnout and the spoiled ballots. They're the same. That it's very difficult to plan for those events, but the Auditor General wants a target. We do put the target and we try to the best of our ability to meet the target, but it's, both of them are sort of not in our control. We have done well. The voters, and in fact, the spoiled ballots, the numbers come down. It keeps on coming down. If you look at where it was the last elections, it was over 2%. Now it's less than 2%, and we're hoping that will keep on improving. The issue of anonymous complaints that were sent by staff members, I would request the Deputy Chair to respond to that matter. You know, the electronic voting is quite interesting, actually, and the CEO will deal with that. I say to say that we've done some desktop research on this. And there are countries that had gone electronic voting that have gone back to paper voting. In the first world, I think Belgium is one of them, if I'm not mistaken. Is it? Netherlands, yes. They went to electronic voting. They had so much trouble that they decided to go back to paper ballot, to a paper ballot. But my CEO, being also an IT trained, will talk more about that. The law requires us to release results within 7 days. And we have released our results by the third day. Why we have not really released them quicker than that is the quality assurance that we have. Because once the results have come in, you know, you will find that some anomalies afflict in our results. And we make sure that we deal with all those anomalies before we release the results. And that is really what, delays the process of releasing the results. We ensure that we check each and every query that has been raised in respect of each and every result before we release, to ensure that there are no comebacks. But our systems are such that, on the end of the first day, second day, we have all the results. So what delays us is really the quality assurance that we do. We're hoping and praying that the next election will be smooth. Fortunately, we are not so new. I always say that I'm sure we have 100 years of experience, because I'm 11 years in the organization, he's 14. He's also 14 years, he's 15, so we've been there for a very long time. So the experience is there, and we're hoping that we'll be able to emulate our colleagues and run a smooth election. The amendments to the Electoral Act, you know that in terms of the law, we make proposals for amendments, and we don't submit them directly to Parliament, we go through the Minister of Home Affairs for that. We had put for ourselves a July deadline to deal with the legislative amendments, July this year. But the Minister was appointed as the AUC chairperson, and we had to wait for a new minister to be appointed. We had a meeting with the new minister last week, Friday, on the amendments. We have discussed with her and her team our proposal, which we are going to submit formally to her this coming week. And once we have submitted our proposal to her, then the process would take its parliamentary process, because she will then have to go. I don't know how the process is, whether it comes to go to cabinet first. I don't know really how it works. But we have already discussed our recommendations with her. And I'm hoping that within that process, parliamentary process, will probably also call us to tell you what our proposals are. Whether she will accept our proposals or not is another.
Madam Chair, sorry, just on a point of information, what is the thrust of the amendment to the law, the purpose of it?
The main amendment relates to overseas voting. You would recall that shortly before the 2009 election, there was a case that was brought before the Constitutional Court challenging the Electoral Act as it was at that time regarding overseas voting. You would recall that at that time only certain categories of South Africans abroad were allowed to vote, which were those who were on diplomatic service, those were overseas for business, for tertiary education, and temporary on business. Those are the categories of South Africans who could vote abroad. And that section of the law was a challenge before the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court struck it down and said that there was no rational basis for distinguishing one South African from another. And basically the court said that all South Africans who are abroad who are already registered should be allowed to vote. So we then had to ensure that we amend the law in a way that will give effect to the decision of the Constitutional Court. But in addition to that, there's an additional matter regarding which the court did not deal with. The first one was whether we had an obligation to provide registration facilities for South Africans who are abroad. And at that time as well, the Constitutional Court held that the South Africans who are abroad who are already registered will only be entitled to a national ballot. The issue of whether they should also be allowed a provincial ballot was not addressed. So the legislative amendments seek to deal with those issues. That's really the rest of the amendments. The other amendments are really of a technical nature. I'm now trying to have dealt with the point that you are raising regarding the projects for the office of the CEO and the office of the commissioner. It's a very interesting governance issue, actually, that also challenges particularly Chapter 9 institutions regarding the role of commissioners, particularly full-time commissioners, vis-a-vis the secretariat of an organization, and whether there are programs that are programs for commissioners only or programs for the whole organizations, the definition of the word commission in the Act, does it refer to the five of us as members of the commission, does it refer to the whole organization? And these are issues that we're grappling with as a new commission. And in fact, to the point that we have decided to engage Professor Mervyn King to assist us with a governance framework for Chapter 9 institutions, because the framework that he has on governance does not particularly apply, strictly speaking, to Chapter 9 institutions, because we are quite unique. So we want him to assist us with coming up with a governance framework for institutions such as ours. But for now, we do have, you know, programs that are for us as commissioners, particularly interaction with political actors, with a portfolio committee, with ministers, with the office of the president. And there are specific programs that we have set for ourselves as members of the commission that we can measure on. But of course, we need to strengthen that as well. I think the rest of the issues I will request my deputy to first deal with the issue of the anonymous complaint. And then the CEO and then his team will deal with all the other operation-related questions. Thank you, Deputy.
you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I wanted to start with the issue, just to emphasize the point that was raised by honorable member Nasser. I got it right this time.
99%.
I did indeed.
I was going to do
Yeah, the issue of the spoil ballots, which the person also responded to. Indeed, there are two categories of people who would fall within it. The first one, as you've indicated, are people who are doing it as a way of protest. But there is also a second category of people who are doing it not because they intend to spoil their ballots. So it becomes important, therefore, as an organization, that we put in place measures to make sure that those people who legitimately want to go and cast a vote and choose their leader, they are educated enough to be able to do that without their ballot ending up in a spoiled ballot. One other issue that the chairperson asked me to respond on, we received a letter from an individual or a group of people calling themselves concerned IEC employees. These people have not identified themselves. They've just sent the letter to, they sent the letter to me. And in a letter that they sent to me, they also sent the same letters, I think, to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, at least in terms of the people who appear on that letter that was sent us, as well as SCOPA, the chairperson of SCOPA. And it looks like this letter was also widely circulated to the media, as well as to certain political parties. But largely, I think the president of the United Democratic Front, Mr. Holomisa, did submit that letter, and that letter we were also made aware that it was also sent to the public protector. So upon our discussions at the commission, we felt that because the issues that are contained within the letter are before the public protector, and the public protector is currently investigating those issues, that we did not want to duplicate processes. And those issues have therefore been deferred to the public protector for the public protector to finalize her investigation. We also sent a letter to all staff, because we don't know who we are dealing with, to all staff to ask them to cooperate with the public protector in her investigation. So that's where matters are at the moment. We don't know who these people are. We don't know whether it's we deal with one person, but that letter we have received it, and we have attended it to it in a manner that I have just explained. And I wanted to also comment a little bit on the issue of electronic voting. I'm one of the people who really love electronic voting. But you may have seen in the newspapers, I think yesterday or today, where there are concerns in the U.S. about what is likely to happen in some areas as a result of the destruction that was left by Sandy, particularly in relation to electronic voting. I tell you what, because you know also when you talk about electronic voting, you talk about quite a number of issues. I mean, exactly what point are you talking about? What interface are you talking about? So in the state, certain states, in the U.S., certain states are using what they call the touchscreen. Now, the concern that has actually been expressed by some of the analysts is in relation to this election is, if you do not have electricity in some of those areas, what is actually going to happen? What's going to happen if you cast a vote and after some time you find that the battery of that machine is no longer operational? You know, so in most instances, people who advocate electronic voting, they also advocate a paper trail so that in case there's a problem, you can always go back to the paper. You can always be able to count your papers manually in case there's a problem. But I think, as the chairperson indicated, we are at a level where now we're exploring the issue, we're trying to look at different models, we're trying to see, you know, is this going to be relevant or not relevant for us, and how do you deal with also with legacy issues? If I've given you the example that member McIntosh raised of a cell phone, what happens in a situation where at home, as a breadwinner and as a father, I tell everybody, to vote whilst I'm on Januashi. What is the sanctity of the secret survey vote? You know, so it is important that we take in consideration all the social, political, and economic matters when we actually dealing with that. So eventually, whatever decision we're going to be taking, it is important that we make sure that it is embedded within the social, political environment within which we operate.
Thank you very much. There are a number of questions that I will share with my colleagues. Norman, you need to get a seat that the speaker was a specific one that I saw for you. Quite a few of those have been answered, but I think Honourable Member Nasella has raised a question relating to not meeting our target with respect to internal audit. I'm going to try and explain it better. You know, sometimes when you're beaten, you really get to be hypersensitive and you put all sorts of controls and things in place to deal with sometimes a very simple situation. And frankly, one of those things, it's like the target we have overachieved in education, which we say we now need to look at. But in internal audit, we just went and looked at almost everything, you know, quite in detail. And as things would work out, at the end, there were some things we had gone in greater detail in terms of the audit program that was fully loaded to the point that there were certain things that we had prioritized right, perhaps lower down in the priority that we simply in that year ran out of time. But the good thing is we prioritized the things, we went systematically through the process and marked the challenges that we had, put dates to when we should achieve and the objectives that we set ourselves, and then, you know, proceeded in that fashion. And that's where I'm saying, if one looks back in hindsight, we could have easily put a problem that we would have achieved and it wouldn't have been an issue, we would still have had the same results perhaps. But that's an area we're looking at. So there is no reason to be concerned that we will have to look at that situation more realistically again. But it was part of, you know, really seeking to ensure that nothing is, you know, in the program, internal audit program is missed. So I think that deals with that part. The 42 million that was in irregular expenditure, I will leave it to my colleagues to explain. But really, in simple terms, it does in the way that it is framed in law, but the PFMA in particular, it often gives the impression to somebody that is not dealing with these matters as people would deal with them in the realm that we deal with, as if, you know, some 42 million had just walked and disappeared. None of that. It is, in fact, a simple prescript or a prescript that the PFMA said, when you advertise, for example, for a tender, indicate how you're going to score that. And in the event, then we have explained that when the AG dealt with this matter, there were already a few of those transactions in this year that we had not indicated scoring. But we applied the scoring in reality. And those are some of the things that are in there. It's nothing, and I just want to put the house to rest. There is no amount of money that we are talking about that has, you know, somehow could not be accounted or took a walk or, you know, none of those things. And I just want to spread that issue. They will talk about the details. But I thought it is important, Chairperson, to point out that we account for your funds completely. There was an issue of programs that we have by Honorable McIntosh dealing with the voter's roll. And what do we mean when we say we have the voter's roll checked? You know, people are born, they come to an age of registration, others unfortunately pass away, and so in the course of our work every month, persons that have applied when they were age 16 and they have now turned 18, in that month that they have turned 18, they will be on the active document of the voter's roll. But persons that have been reported as deceased with the Department of Home Affairs, we will then check our, you know, their population register, synchronize and really remove them from the active segment to the deceased segment portion of the voters. So those are things that we do, but we also actively register people every month. And so we, you know, every month we have to check new registrations against the population voters roll under the population register, and so on and so forth. I hope.
Madam Chair,
I just want to know how it happens. Does somebody go across with a filing cabinet to Home Affairs? How do you actually do it?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. We, you know, in the modern age, we don't do that. Somebody sits at their desk and they, you know, they work on the computer and they have access to the population register for this purpose. It's not people crossing streets carrying. No, it happens electronically. And one must indicate that when we have 23 million people on the voter roll, we run through all of them against population register and pick up, validate their details. So it happens electronically. I must indicate that, you know, this is not a new thing. We have developed ways of working with the Department of Home Affairs, and right now it happens, you know, very, very well. There was also a question about the Program 3, and in particular 3.63 that you asked. What has happened is that, you know, when we have elections, venues that we contract as our voting stations, a majority of them are schools. But as it would be, you know, the amount that we pay for rentals, it's really supposed to help the school or the owner of the venue to perhaps take out insurance for the day if there should be any damages that are beyond our control or whatever, that they can then, you know, use the amount that we pay in a small way to defray the, you know, their costs from an insurance claim. And it has happened in the past where damage have occurred at a school attributed to or related to some of the work that we have done. And where those facilities were insured, they did not have to come to us and say, now you need to help us and pay for this and that and the other. But that amount has not increased in a long time. It, you know, we have kept it at a very minimal rate, to the extent that in some instances, school governing bodies were saying, no, we don't, you know, we don't want you here. And so it took quite a lot of discussion with them, and you know, thank goodness, at the end, they were amicable, and we worked together. That's where we were worried, that there would be a drop in the amount or number of schools that we would be using. But there's also a positive spin off when we use schools, because one of the things that we do in the task teams that we work with, infrastructure task teams that we work with departments, we look at issues of if a school hasn't got facilities like water, electricity. We look at how we help this school get these facilities because we're going to use them. And quite, we did undertake a study a few years ago looking at where we started with the schools and how the facilities have improved over time as we use them. There's quite a positive correlation that we are dealing with in that instance. The other area that you asked was the question of archiving records and knowledge management. Normally, this is an area where that I thought knowledge management and archival of records you will deal with. So you're very close to the mic. When I'm done, I'd like you to help Honorable McIntosh in that respect. The chairperson and vice chairperson were very kind to help deal with the questions of smartphones and things. It can be very complicated. I always ask a very simple question. I say, as South Africans, what is the problem we are trying to resolve through technology when we deal with electronic voting at this stage? And I think that kind of helps me. Because when one looks at the technology that is available and the kind of voting that can happen electronically, we can be talking about millions of things, you know, when you say electronic voting, and not just one. Mm-hmm. So that really is at the heart of what we are seeking to do. And I must say to you that we have, we are in the process of finalizing, we'll soon publish a study that we had undertaken, a desktop study that we had undertaken, looking at what are those countries that have an element of it. We have lots of elements of electronic voting in our country already. But looking at those countries that say, you can vote from wherever you are with whatever technology, to say what is it that they do and how does it, what is the problem that it's seeking to resolve for them and how well does it work for them, or, you know, it, how is it not working for them. There was a cartoon, I think it's in the last presidential elections in the U.S., where they showed a queue in the same voting station where there was an electronic voting outlet to the station and where there's a manual process. In fact, there was no one going there. People were, I think it was in Florida, people were queuing to go, you know, for a manual ballot. And in some instances, it is so. But, of course, we can talk about the result of that study when we have it. Honorable Gom had raised a number of issues related to the technology, and also the chair has answered with respect to the amendment as well as the... I am grateful. I don't have much there. There are a number of questions, Nebusman, that you raised, or issues that you... Sorry?
No.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, yeah. No, it's right. No, you've corrected. Thank you very much. I know them, and I think in a report and a session like this, there are quite a number of things that we don't go into the details of. But let me assure you, that does not take away that we can deal with those issues. We intend not dealing with them. A number of those, Norman and Fiona, I'd like you to deal with, particularly on the issue of, the work that you had set out to do, and the issues that you had raised the last time. I was of the view that when we came here the last time, and as you always do, Chairperson, when we come here, we come from here, we take notes of the issues that you raised. We go back and look at those concerns that you raise and what we need to do with them. And one day when you visit us, you will see the kind of programs that we put together, you know, from things like this or from an audit that we then go and deal with. I want to just say to you that if we had left it to chance, we'd be in big trouble because, you know, then we'll miss quite a lot of them. So we do put them down. If there's something that we miss, I just want to assure you, it's not because we have set out to do that. With respect to outreach, this is an area of work that receives our attention. But to look at the number of, to look at the number of people in the staff complement and say only 33 deal with it, in an election period, it's not quite the right way to look at it. Because what happens is that a lot of the programs I have indicated when I was dealing with program 4, a lot of the work I indicated that we set out to deal with 50 stakeholders, we dealt with 157. We use our staff as well as the capacity that we get through our service providers, partners, you know, all of those, to deal with the increase in the workload that we have in the outreach area. So it's an area where, in an election year, we by far exceed the numbers of persons that we employ. You will realize that we have what we call an expansion staff program. 90% of that expansion staff program that we have in an election year deals specifically with the areas that you had raised. And I thought I should just deal with that issue. We have work that we do when we do work overseas. There are detailed reports that we prepare on whatever it is that we do, related to elections, helping others or them coming here. We detail that work extensively, and if it is so required, perhaps there is no problem that we could share those reports with members. Norman and Fiona, will you deal with the issues particularly related to the 42 million?
Thank you, sir. Yes, in relation to the 42 million, as quite correctly pointed out, the breakdown is on page 97 of the financial statement. And to some extent, I do feel here where some of these issues arose in this year as part of our efforts to clean up our procurement processes. For example, the $3.076 million that relate to the failure to obtain a tax clear certificate. This is expenditure that was incurred in the current year as a result of a mistake that was made in a previous year. Because a tax clear certificate was not obtained at the time we entered into the contract, that expenditure became irregular. It was only identified that that contract was irregular in the current year when we did the comprehensive review of all of our contracts, as I indicated earlier in the presentation. We also have implemented new procedures in terms of compliance checking. We have a fully functional compliance unit that now checks every transaction before it's released. That will prevent this happening in the future. You mentioned that we mustn't become complacent about the fact that the audit, you know, the things that the Auditor General had not mentioned this year, we mustn't assume that they've gone away forever. And I will say to you that particularly in the area of electoral staff payments, it's a constant concern for us, because for us every electoral event on that scale is a new experience, a brand new it's not routine, it's not run-of-the-mill, and so complacency is something we guard against at all times. Getting back to the irregular expenditure, that one isolated incident, the 6,400 Rand that relates to the incorrect vendor being selected, it was purely a mathematical error on the part of the individual concerned. And no matter how good our process is, I hesitate to suggest we will ever get to the point where we can eliminate human error altogether. But as correctly pointed out, the net loss in the context of this whole 42.6 million is in fact the 1,700 Rand that was given to this service provider who was selected in error based on the application of the triple PSA scoring. The next two categories both relate to the failure to indicate in our request for quotes or our request for proposals or so forth, how we were going to allocate the 80-20 part of the 80-20 or the 10 part of the 90-10 in terms of the triple PSA. In fact, the law has changed. There were new regulations in relation to the triple PSA that became effective on the 7th of December last year, which should eliminate this going forward in any event. It is now no longer a matter of discretion for an entity as to how they allocate the preference points for that 10 or that 20. The new triple BEE certificates eliminate the discretion, so that should fall away. Unfortunately, though, again, the way the law is worded, you can't disclose the expenditure as irregular until it is actually incurred. So to the extent that any of the irregular expenditure relates to term contracts that spread beyond the end of last financial year, we will still need to express that expenditure as irregular going forward, despite the fact in some cases that the error happened last year or the year before, or even a year before that. And the final category of irregular expenditure relates to post-event purchase orders. Again, because of the way the law is written, a delegation from the accounting officer is only valid subject to that individual carrying out and complying with all of our internal procurement processes. And one of our internal processes is that no individual within the organization commits the IEC to expenditure without a written and official purchase order. So in these cases, that purchase order was created after the event of the service being delivered, which is an internal process issue, and we track and log these. We've implemented a large number of exception reports, in fact, that mean we monitor and manage these things periodically, at least monthly, if not more regularly. They're reported to the Commission in the context of their oversight role, and we continue to do battle to eliminate them completely.
To just one financial element, the question of payment within 30 days. We do check that on a weekly basis. And the only cases in current financial error at this time that we are struggling with are cases where individuals' bank accounts are closed by the time that we've got to pay them, tracking them down and getting a bank account active again. But I dare say that when it gets to a service delivered, we've not got any that exceeds the 30-day period. honestly and truly not. We're doing very, very well because of active tracking of payments on a weekly basis. The question of knowledge was, I was born in the first half of the previous century and also struggled with the onset when I inherited the function at the stage. But the IEC produced massive amounts of data. This would be every by-election, every election, in terms of age groups, categories, provincial, national. There's closeout reports on every project that we do. And unless these things are organized in a way which makes them accessible and where people could have access and learn from previous experience, the alternative is dumping them in cardboard boxes. And what the Knowledge Management Center deals with is basically to organize and structure and have a method of collection of information which makes them accessible to current staff members, future staff members, so that we don't reinvent the wheel over and over again. Electronically, manually, the library comes into the picture. It's the integration of all sources of information in a structured way. I must just say that our library at the IEC at this point in time, because of the amount of data that we have gathered in a structured way, is increasingly being interesting to scholars in this particular area. We have regular visitors that actually come and have a look at reports and where it is a handy source of information.
There are questions that have not been responded to, but to say to Honorable McIntosh, knowledge management is record keeping in the language that we use in our era. That changed record keeping to knowledge management. That's what it is about. There's an issue. There are 33 people that the Honorable Portman referred to. In fact, we are in the process of employing 52 people in our outreach program, full-time staff members. The recruitment process has already started, and we hope that will also accelerate our outreach work. And Norman, you have not responded to the question of the CCMA case. And there's also the issue of training of staff on internal controls and what are we doing in that regard. Can you please respond to those questions?
Chair, on the CCMA, I'll have to revert to you. I honestly can't recall the specific cases and the details of the cases. I'll follow up and I will respond to the Secretariat. Fiona, for the...
In terms of training staff, we have comprehensively reviewed not only our procurement policy and standard operating procedures in this year, but also across the board in terms of finance and internal control. We reviewed all of the documentation and the standard operating procedures. What we are doing now is we've implemented a process where we have at least four procurement workshops every year that we call our colleagues from the provinces in, and we share and disseminate the new information. We've also started a communication program whereby key areas of internal control are placed on posters which are disseminated across all of our local offices. The four workshops that we hold annually, there is one that has a specific budget flavor, one that has a specific procurement flavor. There's the financial services, which is the internal controls mainly around the payment processes, workshop, and then the final one mops up any issues that weren't managed to be covered in any of the previous three.
Thank you, Ms. Fiona. The four workshops that you convene for the provinces when you train your colleagues, is the issue of non-compliance, let me say the laws, the regulations, take into account, or how do you do it? Because the Auditor General has raised this.
Absolutely. It's one of the prime focuses of the procurement workshop, which is where the main areas of non-compliance and irregular expenditure arise. It is also part of the monthly exception reports that are now being disseminated to provinces, highlight all the incidences that we have identified within the previous months. And what I will say is that the four workshops, it's four topics of workshops, and they're effectively training the trainers so the provincial colleagues can go out to a local level as well.
If I may add to that, the areas where we're struggling in terms of this is related to subjects. Travel, where people get on an airplane prior to where the booking is late, it's done on the morning of the flight or the previous day, and it takes a little bit longer to go through the process of actually getting to a purchase order. And the other one is catering, where it relates to workshops and people need to be provided like we've been provided here today. Those are the two subjects. It's not that people are acquiring assets or in any other areas. These are the two areas where we'll be battling to get the slate clean.
Thank you, Mr. Norman Duplessis. On page 58 of your annual report, there is a paragraph there, an issue regarding there was a major case involving submission of candidates, whatever. If you could explain, or if somebody could explain as to what was actually the problem there, because the IEC had to go to the electoral court to appeal against the decision that was taken. Can maybe somebody explain to us as to what was actually happening there? Was it the cutoff date and the IEC decided to go and appeal after the cutoff date, or what was happening there? Honorable Bosman, you also had your hand up. Honorable Matebe, you'll be the last. Followed by Honorable Maduna Peterson. Honorable McIntosh, you will be the last.
Yeah, what we agreed that we did not lose a cent. Sorry, in terms of the 42 million. But this has an effect to us as public representatives. Why? Because if someone is given the requirement to all other people is that you're going to get these things if you provide a tax clearance, and then they get a report that says someone did not give a tax clearance, but this person got the particular work, then you have communities seeing it the other way around. That's why whenever I'm in committee, I try to be there so that we then be able to read where are we going. That's why I'm saying all these things, if you look at them, they have an effect in terms of the public out there. We would not be here to get the answers, and we have to give those answers. That's why we need to happen, so that we go and give those particular answers. But we are saying we need to be careful in terms of whatever we put in place to say this is how we're going to win. I think the National Strategic Framework has its own saying in terms of what do we do in a situation. That's why I was interested in the issue of commission services and all that, because we need to then determine what policies are actually developed, because the framework gives us that opportunity to say it. In a situation where the Presidential Procurement Act does not, therefore, if we use it, then we have a problem in terms of the kind of work that has to be. You can then, within that framework, develop a policy that would then. And in this instance, I think we need to really look on those things, because you could see that something is happening. Most of the things you are told of the PSA, that we did not comply with that. But in a case where we did not comply, there should be a policy that is actually covering us in terms of that. And did we use that particular policy? Because if there's a message that has been sent to us as public rep to say we need to look at that in the framework and the issues relating to who are you working with, who are your clients, and how do we then within that framework develop a policy that will. I think the commission has to deal with that. So that's why I was saying we need not just say because we did not lose a cent. Why do we also say we don't have to lose a cent, but we also have to service people, and we need not force issues where we cannot. The act is so broad that some of the issues is impossible for us to achieve. Thank you. Lastly, the issue of internal audit. We have appointed three companies, if I'm not sure. Is it three or two? The KPMG to partner with the internal audit. That's what I have seen. Now, can we be given the reasons for that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on Program 3 for Strategic Objective 2.6. Doesn't work. Objective 3.6, secure and maintaining local offices and venues for electoral events. I'm not sure whether I understand this objective very well, because my concern is on the issue regarding security. We still remember 1999, 2009, during election period, we had a problem of missing ballot papers. I'm not sure whether, what a measurement have you done up to now? What do you think you're going to do on that issue? And the last one is question of monitoring and evaluation. What has been done in terms of not complying? Thank you.
Madam Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know the percentage of persons with disabilities employed by IEC, because it's not reflecting on the report, and I just want to know why. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair, I have one short question. Maybe we can be apprised as to whether in the discussion with the new minister you talked about having local government elections and national elections on the same day, and if you can't disclose that confidential discussion. I remember the CEO at the last meeting was very bashful and a little embarrassed when we pushed him to know what was happening. That obviously is of interest to the politicians who provide the IEC with its work.
Chairperson, my issue was the matter that Honourable Bosna also passed on, that the issues of Preferential Procurement Policy, Financial Act. Now that the department is the IEC is looking at the current TRIPCEE as an intervention, it would be wise to see that prior to getting to the processes the next time around as to whether it is something that you think will yield the results, other than now the perception that it might, because now you have not started using it, I presume. So that we don't have a situation where obviously there are no areas of emphasis. I think that is a very good thing from the AG side. But where we are sitting, we're not the AG, we are the committee. We want to ensure that there is an element of emphasis on areas where we think as the committee need attention. So that as we go forward, we work together in that road. Whenever there are areas of concern, we're able to pick them up here before we even get to the area where you are also found wanting. That area you should have known about. Because what the AG does, which we want to know, we want to warn you with the department as it stands, that it will not touch on the area that they want to deal with you, they want to deal with next year. They keep quiet and let you fix your house. But the next time around, they simply deal with it and say unqualified. They say this is a qualification. Now, that becomes an area where you would say, but you are a good friend. I thought I could trust you. No, they do not work on the space. And that is what I picked up, that this is one area that we need to ensure that when we engage honestly and openly, and in that note, be taken as that. And that is an area that I wanted to touch on there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. You know the Home Affairs Department got unqualified report last year. This year they got a qualified. Now we don't want the IEC to do the same. We are going to be,
talking a tough language because we don't want things to go back. We want actually improvement. So, Mavion, CEO, CFO, Chair, you must crack the whip because we really don't want to see this entity going backward. We want to see it going forward and improving as you've always done. It's one entity that we are proud of. Please don't disappoint us. I'm sure there are several questions that were posed by honorable members.
Chair, qualified audit was very traumatic, and we wouldn't want to go through that again. So we will do everything in our power to ensure that we don't slip back. Our discussions with the minister did not really discuss at all the combined elections, as we call them. We just dealt with the legislative amendments. That issue did not arise. And I also had to say that we have never been formally approached by anybody regarding that subject, the subject that we've always read about in the media. There is a question that I thought, or the question that the chairperson raised regarding the case that was submitted, that we appealed against in the Constitutional Court. What happened is that in the run-up to the 2011 municipal elections, at the time of submission of candidates, the IFP, you know, the law says you have to submit your list of candidates locally at the municipality where you intend to contest. So the IFP had some issues. I think they had some challenges, and they could not submit their list of candidates where they were supposed to submit. They then, I think, tried to submit at our provincial office. And the provincial office told them that, you know, the provincial office refused to accept the list and said that they were supposed to submit it at the local level. Then the IFP went to challenge that decision in the electoral court to say that their right to participate is more important, really, than where they're supposed to submit, that it was okay for them to submit even at our provincial office. We challenged the decision before the Constitutional Court. We felt very strongly that for local government elections, there is a dispensation that specifically, legal dispensation that specifically indicates where political parties and candidates are supposed to submit their list of candidates. And because it is a local government election, those lists have to be submitted locally. And then if you allow people to submit wherever they want it, then there'll be a lot of confusion. People can give all sorts of reasons why they could not submit where they're supposed to submit. For instance, with the IFP at that time, they indicated that they wanted to, somebody had taken the list by mistake to Johannesburg, and then they took it back to where it was supposed to be submitted, and then when they realized that, they hired a helicopter to try and take the list where it was supposed to go to, and then the cloud was low, then the helicopter could not fly, then eventually they submitted it at the Durban office, our Durban office. Now, if you're going to allow those kind of reasons, somebody can tell you that, you know, on the day when I was supposed to submit, I had a tire burst, and then I couldn't, and then we said we cannot allow that kind of situation. The law has to apply. And we decided to go to the Constitutional Court because the Electoral Court had found in favor of the IFP. And we challenged the decision of the Electoral Court in the Constitutional Court. And the Constitutional Court found in our favor to say there is a particular legal dispensation that has to be adhered to by all political parties. If the IEC makes exceptions to that, then it will be very problematic that we don't have the discretion to, make exceptions to the law as articulated in the municipal election. So that's what that case. We're quite pleased, actually, with the outcome of, with the decision of the Constitutional Court, because it's now clear that in a local government election, you submit your list of candidates at the local level. Thanks.
Madam Chair, could I just add to that through you? That I think the IEC has set a standard of performance which is very good for our country, because And I think people live in fear of the IC, because too often it's easier to ask for forgiveness than to be compliant. And I think it's, in that sense, the IEC is a real role model of correctness in that respect. And also of equity, I think, to everybody.
Thank you, Honourable Member. There are questions that still need to be...
Hello, Paulo. Who coined the parliament science and that I detail? I passed a committee to see the IEC. Is outside and I discuss the private members being as part of the many other policy suggestions or changes, but in the area of legislation. Now, Sicily Mova, Sivan, which is Sawienda, mean Londo, Lonyaga, we are Telamus Lonyak, Kanya Sawienda, Unyawazai, Kabutaya Sky, Matinalon, Kangi, the Sifundema Pepe, Sicily Committee in Quatra, yes, I see, Safmani Letters to Gakubo. It is sad. Yes, why is it good? Sun is the living of Tetanat. Masad Sayo, yeah. La letter is what we have members commit. So, Gogo as Sibani, none of my politics signal in the entire when you went there. But of never see it, the line of the guy say, is a boy. Good. I go and a boy, yes, and we'll get one and rank. So,
I'm sure it's the chair who responded to that question that they are still busy with the legislation. I'm sure because the minister was new coming to the new committee, they first had to sit with the minister and brief the minister, and after that, legislation. I'm sure, Jemora, you are saying that it's a bit late now. I'm sure we will only get that next year.
I get it. When you said that when you promise me, I keep the promise. Because we were told that by end of October, we must relax. We are going to have our gift, whether we like it or not, but it will be the message that we get from the IEC.
Because of the minister's office, Minister Munyawa Hamba, and then we had a new minister. That's where the problem was. Me Mudula Silokopa, CEO, we are one of the Dera Nami Mwava, Umsutu, I know him as Ekoyenis Eb, and to Umepensi, Kusa say CEO, now Kuya Tidera La Peka. And Tatemwepe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just quickly go through the questions that have been asked. I think the first one, Mepotman. Ah, got it. Thank you very much. Why do we have three companies doing the audit and we have a panel? You got?
The internal audit.
Yeah, the internal audit, yes. We have a panel. And basically for a number of reasons, to ensure that the kind of schedules that we put, we have enough capacity. But there's also a very important reason in that there are also emerging audit firms that we need to, you know, also deal with, you know, and we try and give the work on a progressive basis, but also on a check and balance kind of basis. We do not have a big internal audit unit, so they are part of our capacity. So to have one company, we can't put all of our eggs in one basket in that respect. It works very, very well for us.
Let me just say for you, Chair,
a closed-source model of internal audit where we have just, I think, two full-time employees in internal audit, and then the rest of the work is done by, is outsourced. Yes, so that's why we opt for that closed-source model.
And finally, I just wanted to say to you, with that model, really we have the best of both worlds in that if we employ people that stay with us, they miss out on the training and development in the field. It's one of the areas where things change very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So in the model that we use, we are assured that the people we bring on board have their current practices with them. There was a question raised by Nema Tebe regarding the three 3.6. And I just want to clarify that when we talk about securing local offices, we are talking about having local offices in every area working for us. In terms of election security, the question that you were raising relating to the 2009 elections in Mpumalanga, it has been dealt with. And we do have safe areas for security storage in every municipality, primarily also as a result of the special votes that we undertake. Special votes have specific difficulties that they present to us, but we deal with them as best as we can. You will recall that in terms of the special votes arrangement, persons can be visited at home 2 days before election day. And persons can come to the office of the presiding officer a day before election day. And those ballots we need to keep in safe area overnight. And that's what we try and do. We deal with it fairly quietly. We work extensively with the security establishments, and those facilities are in place. Nema Maduna Peterson asked the question about a percentage of persons with disabilities. You know, I must admit, and I had Norman say, look, I have to come back. And we can do that. But I think it's also very important to look at it in two ways. And I think we did not. We had 2% target. I think if I recall, we attained 1.6, but we will, it's one of those things, Chairperson, that will come back to you on. But let me explain what that target of 1.6, you know, what we have achieved of 1.6% or thereabout is. We have in this election tried to also now, in terms of the way we recruit people, look at, capturing that data. Previously, we did not necessarily have a reliable way of capturing that data. We now do. But when one looks at the kind of work that we do, with SunCap, for example, we actually go to an arrangement where they become a service provider for us, and they then replicate the work they do with persons with disabilities in their area of work extensively. They have the networks. They understand the challenges sometimes. In fact, more times better than we do, and so on and so forth. So in that instance, we do not say to them, what are the amount of people that you have used to do that, and how many of them you have reached. Progressively, we need to get to that point, and we will deal with it. But in terms of purely the people that we employ, that information we will send through Norman. I think it's 1.6% or thereabouts of the people that we had employed. I'm sorry that, Chairperson, we do not have this information right before us at this point, but we will let the Secretariat have it. There was an issue raised of the ISP, I think the Chair has dealt with, and the PFMA issues that, Fiona will deal with. And I think that leads to the questions that we had. Fiona, you deal with the PFMA.
The changes in legislation to the triple PFA came into effect on the 7th of December last year and were applied from that date. Because they relate to the need to advertise, I am reasonably confident that our application thereof will eliminate any further instances of irregular expenditure. But as you quite correctly pointed out, the AG every year comes up with new questions and new issues of things that they've never thought of before. And we try and engage with them regularly and early so we can address the questions before they've been asked. I would hesitate to say that we will be 100% successful. But I'm sorry, I'm an accountant and in fact an auditor by trade. I never say absolutely definitely if I can possibly avoid it. Reasonably definitely, I think. I'm fairly confident and hopeful, but I wouldn't like to promise until the report is in.
Sounds like she should be a politician.
Thank you, honorable members. I would like to thank the IEC, the chairperson and the vice chairperson for the good work that the entity is doing and for the unqualified report that you got this time.
we will seriously be making sure that you don't go back, but you move forward and improve on what you got this year. Thank you very much. Continue getting rewards, you know, getting invites from abroad. We are happy to hear that your work abroad is becoming more and more above what you can have. But it shows that the world is looking at you as one of the role models in the IEC world. So congratulations on your awards, and we hope that you will continue with your good work. Honourable members, I want to thank you for all your inputs. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. Hold on, let's go. Nakokas. All the girls now. I must take them to Wanongoma, a new game.